Hi, this is David Dickens, and today we are doing our third in a three-part series about retirement questions and financial planning questions that you might ask by generation. So we started with the baby boomers, we hit the Gen X last time, and today we're talking about millennials. So if you're a millennial, strap in. I think we got a good show for you. If you're not, think of a millennial you might want to forward this podcast to. I'll go get Walter, and we'll get started.
Do you need help protecting your finances as you enter retirement? David Dickens of KC Financial Advisors has got you covered. Welcome to the Cover Your Assets KC podcast.
Walter Storholt back with you alongside David Dickens, and it's time for another great episode here on Cover Your Assets KC. David's based out of Overland Park, serving the Kansas City area and beyond. Find us from anywhere on CoverYourAssetsKC.com. And David, it's finally my turn. The millennials take the spotlight today. I'm excited.
There you go. How is that? Is the spotlight shining right in your eyes?
Right in the eyes. That's right. But I'm prepared for it. I've had the spotlight on me a couple of times in this broadcasting career
of mine.
So I should be ready for this moment, I would imagine.
I think so. And you can, you know what? You can correct me when I fall off the wagon here and get something wrong. You say, wait a minute, pal. That's not exactly the way it works.
That's right. Us millennials aren't all lazy. Come on now.
I am not going down the lazy route, I'll assure you.
All right. Good. All right. So let's talk about millennials and retirement planning and the questions we should be asking. Like you said, David, we did this for the baby boomer generation and Gen X. Now it's the millennials' turn. So if we're putting brackets, age brackets around this, we're talking about born between 1977 and 1995. I feel like 77, that sure feels like an older millennial. Like I wouldn't think of somebody born in the late 70s as a millennial.
Yeah, my quick little Google search kind of said 81 to 96, but
yeah,
you know,
it varies depending on the source, I think, sometimes.
But kind of, you know, late 20s to mid 40s is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And last weekend I was in Atlanta for a nephew's wedding, and
okay,
I was surrounded by the vast majority of my favorite millennials. And I was thinking about this podcast, what I was going to say, the stunning personalities that were in that room, and thinking, you know what, in no way dissing any of my other friends or all of my clients, none of whom are millennials, I really like millennials. They are a lot of fun.
Nice. We'll take that. I think we'll take being a lot of fun.
And there's so much ahead of you guys. You get to, you know, I mean, kind of the end of this podcast says, you have so many choices that you get to make. Don't let life happen to you. Make those choices, get a plan, and then just execute the heck out of it so that you look back and go, wow, I killed it about 20 or 25 years from now.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, let's set ourselves up for some success in the future. I like that a lot. So a couple of good bullet points I know that you've got prepared for us here, David. Important for us to remember millennials. I mean, you gave out the ages, so this is stating the obvious perhaps, but we're kind of in different life stages right now. It's an evolving landscape as we try to analyze what our benefits might be at work. We might be in different stages of our retirement, either still young in our careers or for those who are in that 40 range, you know, they're already pretty deep into their careers. But either way you slice it, still some good working years ahead of the millennial generation. And I would imagine that kind of then shapes some of the advice you start to give.
Oh, it definitely does. And there's so many different. So some have kids. Some have a lot of kids. Some are in their early 40s and have no kids. Some are still whacking away at student loans. Or unfortunately, some are paying off credit card debt. So there's certainly not a generic, frankly, there's not a generic baby boomer or Gen Xer either, but there's definitely not a generic millennial. So none of the stuff we're going to say today is investment advice for you, the listener, and some of it's going to be fairly generic, but I'm going to try to get as specific as possible to, you know, give some actionable guidance.
Okay. Well, to begin, you kind of talked a little bit about that student loan component. I got to think, so I'm raising my hand here, David. We just paid off Connie's last student loan.
Oh, man, that was a good feeling. A
couple of weeks ago, yeah. It was nice to kick that can down the road for a while when we weren't having to pay any interest on it. And then when that interest started kicking in again, we said, okay, we're going to get rid of this now. But yeah, so that's dead and gone, thankfully. But I know a lot of people that are in my fellow millennial situation are going to still have those on the docket for quite some time. So any key questions about student loans that you're seeing millennials face?
Well, yeah, the question a lot comes up in discussion. Should I prioritize paying off my student loans? Should I do that and not get so worried about putting money away for my own retirement? Should I do that instead of having an emergency fund or, you know, heaven forbid, credit card debt? So the first thing I wanted to talk about real quickly is kind of how would you prioritize those types of things?
Competing goals, it seems.
Exactly. And you've got a fixed amount of money every month, hopefully growing with your career and your success and et cetera. But so I would prioritize those types of things this way. The first thing I would do is make sure that I paid my student loan. I would definitely pay at least the minimum. I'm not sure that I would overpay in deference to the other things that you want to be saving for. But make sure you never miss a payment because that ends up coming back and biting you at some point in the future. So you make your minimum student loan payment, and then you absolutely positively, if you've got a 401k at work or a 403b or a 457, depending on the type of employer you work for, and they offer a match, then at a minimum, contribute up to the point that the match happens. And I'm going to talk about that here in another 5 or 8 minutes. So that would be second. Third would be pay off your credit cards. Hopefully you're sitting there with a big smile on your face saying, you know what? I don't carry a credit card balance, and that's awesome. But if you do, you want to make your student loan payment minimum, you want to get the match on your 401k, and then you want to put all of your efforts into paying off credit cards. The fourth would be establishing an emergency fund or a house down payment fund or whatever that type of thing that you might be saving for that's really important to you. The reason I prioritize paying off credit cards before that is if you have an emergency and you don't have an emergency fund, you're going to put it on a credit card. Well, you already have a credit card debt for whatever reason, but putting money away in an emergency fund while you still have credit card debt at 15, 20, 24, 28% would be silly. So the third thing is prioritize getting rid of all credit card debt. Then in your mind, prioritize never having credit card debt again, and then switch over to emergency fund, house down payment fund, that kind of thing. So that's how I would prioritize my cash flows if I were in this range and I still had student loans. That's how I would prioritize those.
Okay, very good. I think that's a great thing to keep on our minds, millennials, right? Like, let's think about what these goals are, and maybe there are some different priorities that we need to put in place. But interesting, what you described there, David, doesn't necessarily match up with what my assumptions would have been. So I think that's a nice little reality check. And
was there a big outlier there?
Well, I think the student loan one being like maybe it doesn't make sense to pay it off as fast as possible. You know, I just kind of figured that those would be ones where you'd want to knock them out quickly. Certainly, if you've got credit card debt with higher interest rates, I get paying that down faster and those kinds of things. But yeah, I don't know why. I'm in that, it's that spectrum of like, even if it's smart to keep debt, I kind of like not keeping it. So I think I'm just in that end of the spectrum. I'm going to pay off something as fast as possible, even if I'm only saving myself a couple $100 in, you know, total interest over the course of, you know, X amount of time. I would just still rather it not be on my mind. I want one less line on my spreadsheet. You know what I
mean? Yeah. You know what? Over the course of your 40 or 50 years of being an adult, that is going to serve you very well.
That those little things will pile up, right? So I'm not going to change that way necessarily. Something else that I think is interesting, I hear friends talking about this a little bit, David, and it's how do you, and actually, you know, hand raised here, actually, these are conversations my wife Connie and I are having right now, how to plan for the potential costs of having and raising children. This is probably going to be around the corner for us soon. And so, yeah, we're starting to think about this a little bit. And I don't know, when do you start a 529 plan? Should you start a 529 plan? Should I just set aside money for, you know, expenses that are going to increase? How do I even go about guessing those things? I could take that one question and probably expand it to another 20 or 30 if we needed to.
An entire podcast just on that.
Yeah.
So having kids has never been an economic decision. I suppose you could look back to the old days when people were running farms and they say, well, a couple extra kids, somebody to milk the cows and to run a plow and to blah, blah, blah. So extra farm workers would be a reason to have
children. So we need to get some cows to make this worthwhile is what you're saying.
But in today's urban society, there is very little economic reason because kids are expensive. I didn't know this, but I Googled it. The Brookings Institution, the Washington Post ran an article that said they believe it costs about $17,000 a kid per year to have a child. $310,000 to get them from age 0 to 18, and then they go to college.
Wow.
So kids are they're awesome. We got three of them and can't imagine life without them. But they're expensive. And so you mentioned a 529 plan, and that I think they have to be born because they have to be named as the beneficiary. But you could start a 529 plan, or the grandparents could, or a neighbor down the street. Anybody can start a 529 plan for a kid. The nice thing about them is that anybody can contribute. You don't have to, one side of grandparents don't have to set one up, and the other side sets one up, and then the parents set one up. You can set one up, and then people can contribute to the same plan. I should have looked this up before we got on the podcast. Most states do not offer a tax deduction for doing that. I happen to have a client in Illinois who does get a state tax deduction by putting money into the 529 plan for his kids. So that's something to check out. But it's not really about getting a tax deduction now. It's really about having the money grow tax-free and have it come out when that kid is in college. Or, if they go to an expensive prep school or et cetera, you can use it for that too. But the grandparents contribute, et cetera. We didn't do that. I don't even know when 529 plans came about, but I'm in my mid-60s. I don't think when we had kids, 529 plans had even been created. What we did was we bought a couple of rental properties and figured by the time the girls go to college, we'll have those properties paid off and then the cash flow will pay for their college. So there's a lot of ways to, I think I used the term skin the cat last episode, and I hope that didn't disturb anyone.
I remember that, yeah.
But there are a lot of ways to skin this cat, and those are two of them. But potential costs of having kids are expensive, and they're awesome. If that is your choice as a married couple, I say go for it and, get a really good career and make a bunch of money, and then you don't even think about what that costs you to raise kids. And once they're bringing you grandkids, you forget all about the costs of raising those kids.
That's a great point. Yeah, I got to imagine that. We definitely view it through a different lens this century, these days, but still a worthwhile venture. But a couple of good things to be thinking about for those who, maybe like me, are in the process of planning for that in the future. Another big topic of conversation, if I can jump to this one, David, as I think about millennial concerns, is believe it or not, even though we're far from taking it, we're thinking about Social Security. I'm thinking about it a lot just from one being a business owner. My Social Security setup is a little bit different because of the way that, I
get
compensation. Yeah, exactly. And some double happening there. But also then I think about Connie and her job that she started last year. She actually doesn't pay into Social Security anymore. They put her on a 401A plan. And that was kind of a new thing to learn about and understand. And that's something in lieu of Social Security. But if I understand right now, she's not paying into the system, so she's going to have a lower benefit many years into the future if she stays in this job for a long time. So to me, the Social Security complex for our generation just seems to be getting more and more muddied and complex to plan for.
Agreed. So I'm confident that Social Security will still be around when millennials get there because it is a dramatic social safety net that we have in America that has done nothing but grow in its creep over it was created in 1935. FDR created it. It's funny, back then you had to be 65 to get it, and life expectancy was 66 or 67 years old.
it was a losing game for retirees back then, for sure.
Exactly. So people wonder why Social Security is upside down right now, why it's in borderline insolvent. Well, that's because we still can get it at 62. And if you make it to age 65, then in America, if your life expectancy is about 85 years old. So that's 20 or more years that you'd be drawing out of Social Security. But when it was created, it was supposed to carry somebody for 2 or 3 years. I think there will be changes for millennials based on what we know of the Social Security system today versus what they will see when they get there. So the last big changes happened. Ronald Reagan put together a commission, bipartisan, and they came up with some recommendations in 1981, and they were implemented in 1983. And it wouldn't be a shocker to know that the changes that we are going to have to come up with over the next 2, 3, 5 years are going to look somewhat similar to that. So it used to be the retirement age was 65. Now full retirement age is 67. Won't be a shocker to me if they move that up to age 70 and graduate that in for people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. Before the 1980s, your Social Security benefits were not taxable as income, but they became taxable after 1983 based on how much other income you had. And it doesn't take a whole lot of other income to make your Social Security taxable. So a married filing joint is about 44 grand of other income, half your Social Security plus other income. Over 44 grand, well, your Social Security is 85% of it is taxable. It won't be a shocker to me to know that they get rid of that 85% thing and just make Social Security benefits fully taxable. So they're probably going to move the retirement, full retirement age up. They're going to make, I would expect they make benefits fully taxable. They're probably going to find a way to adjust the cost of living increase, the COLA, downward, such that the cost of living increases over the decades coming will be less than what they've been in the last decade. And 2 years ago, I think it was over 8%. This year, it looks like it's going to be 4 or 4.5%. They're going to find a way to reduce that, I'm confident. And then millennials might know this. Certain millennials will know this. After your earnings is above a certain level, you don't pay any more Social Security tax, your FICA tax. This year, that's $168,600. So if you make $170,000, then your last $2,400, you didn't pay any FICA tax on that. If you make $300,000 a year, then $132,000 is not taxable by FICA. And that there's a good reason for that is because your earnings are capped as to what can be taxed by Social Security, because the income you can get from Social Security is capped. It's based on your best 35 years of work history. But if you made $500,000 or $1 million or $2 million a year, you get the same amount of Social Security as a person who this year made $168,600. So what they're likely to do is, I mean, Elizabeth Warren wants to say, you know what, tax all dollars that you earn, but keep the cap of how much you can get out of Social Security when you retire, keep that in place. Well, that seems like a big ripoff to higher income. That's serious income redistribution. And that may be your thing. It's not my thing. All taxes are, a lot of taxes are income redistribution. And to a certain extent, that's a fine thing. But more and more and more of it becomes real, real tricky in a capitalist society. And so, you know, be careful what you wish for, I guess. So I'm convinced that I said too many words on that topic. The answer is I'm convinced Social Security will be around for millennials. I just think it'll be a little different. You'll retire a little bit later. You'll get your Social Security payments later. They'll be fully taxable, and the cost of living increases won't be so big. But it'll still be there for you, I'm convinced.
The more we rely on it, the more we're going to be affected by the changes to Social Security. So another reason to maybe try to get off that train, at least in terms of using it as our central retirement planning strategy, I suppose.
Yeah. And obviously, the more you make, since the amount of income you get from Social Security is capped, the higher standard of living you had when you were working, that almost always translates into a higher standard of living that you want when you are retired. So for people who had a more modest standard of living, Social Security might cover 70, 80, or 90% of what they need in retirement. For people who had a higher standard of living, it might cover 20 or 30 or 40% of what they want to spend in retirement. So that's where putting that those calculations into your real written financial plan, that's how you can determine, well, how much money do I need to save above and beyond what Social Security is going to give me? And so that's just part of the planning process. And hopefully, as a, you know, I was going to say as an older millennial, but every millennial in my book should already have a written plan. It doesn't have to be from a fancy piece of software like I have. You ought to have a written plan that says, here's when I'm going to retire. Here's how much I'm going to need. Here's how much I have to save every year to get there. And then you adjust that plan every year or two based on how you're doing. And my experience with myself, my clients, and my friends is you tend to do better than you can even envision you're going to do in your 20s and 30s. So that's an awesome thing. You just keep ratcheting your plan up because you continue to do better. Hopefully that's the way it works for every millennial that listens to this and every millennial that I know.
Absolutely. I think that's great. I know we got two more questions to hit here, and you actually make a great segue into this next one, David. And I know the answer to this one, but I know a lot of other millennials who aren't sitting here talking to financial advisors like you all the time may not be quite as confident or abreast in answering this or knowing whether they should or shouldn't. And that's, you know, how can I take advantage of employer-sponsored retirement plans, 401ks and the like? Or should I? You know, should I participate in all these extra things? What if they're offering something extra like a 457? Does that make sense to also contribute to that if I'm doing a 401k? And I know it can get complex for millennials to try and figure out all those different waters when your employer, thankfully, might be giving you lots of options, but you got to figure out which ones to take and how to manage it all.
Yeah, so the answer to the very first question was student loans first, and then 401k, 403b, 457, get the match. And here's what I say. How can I take advantage of an employer-sponsored retirement plan? Get the match. At a minimum, if you do nothing else, make sure you get the match. I'm going to state the obvious. Here's what that means. Let's say you make 100 grand and your employer says, you know what, we'll match the first 5% of whatever you put in. So you say, I'm going to put 5% of my own money in and let them put 5% of their money in. So 5 grand from you, 5 grand from there. It's almost like, no, it's exactly like your 5,000 made 100% that year because you got 5,000 of free money from your employer. If you say, oh, I just want to put in 2,500, well, they're only going to give you 2,500 bucks. So, which is better than a sharp stick in the eye, but it's not as good as you could have gotten. It's not all the free money you could have collected.
Still leaving money sitting on the table.
Leaving money sitting on the table. Yeah. So you say, well, gee, Dave, I make more than that, and I put in a lot more than that. And so there are ways. So the maximum as a millennial that you can put into your 401k is 23 grand, not $5,000, not 7,000 like you can put in your IRA or your Roth. 23 grand is the most that you can put in your 401k. That's a bunch of money. Let's say you're self-employed. There are a couple of really good options. One is a simple IRA, just exactly spelled as it sounds, simple. You can put 16 grand into a simple IRA. You say, oh, my employer doesn't have a 401k or I'm my own employer. Fine. Open up a simple IRA, put 16 grand in there if you can. You can have a SEP, a self-employed plan. That is 25% of your compensation, up to 69 grand a year. So you make a bunch of money as a self-employed person, open a SEP. You could open up an individual 401k as well, a little bit more reporting required. But there are ways to save bunches of money inside of a tax-deferred plan, like a 401k, a simple, a SEP, a 403b, a 457. There are good reasons to save as much as you can in that plan. The last question we're going to cover is, are there reasons to not do that? So I've got a couple of good answers for that next question as well. But the beautiful thing about these employer-sponsored plans is every time you get your paycheck, that money's already taken out. So you never get a chance to see it. You don't get a chance to spend it. You don't have to come up with 10 or 20 or $16,000 at the end of the year, because it's been coming out every 2 weeks. And so systematic savings into plans like this, it's worth a lot to your peace of mind and to you getting to where you're trying to get to for your retirement goals.
Okay, very good, helpful. I do have one clarifying question there. Is it possible that the definition of the match changes from company to company, where you described an example of where if you submit 5% of your pay, you put $5,000 in, they're going to say, okay, $5,000 is the max we're going to contribute based on your pay. That's what we're going to put in. So your first $5,000 is getting matched that dollar for dollar. Are there plans, though, where it's structured a little bit differently, where it's more not dollar for dollar, but just saying we'll match a 3% of your pay, but you've got to go all the way up to the max in order to get that 3% from them? Or am I misunderstanding maybe the wording on other plans? They all work like that way that you described.
So there could be a plan like that, but I've never seen any employer who says, if you put in the max, then we'll give you a little 3% kicker.
Okay.
They could do that, but generally speaking, all the employer is really trying to do is incentivize you. It's an extra benefit. Incentivize you to feather your own nest for retirement and to think twice about leaving my employ, because look at this free money I'm giving you, and your next employer might not have a match. So I've seen things like, we will put in, if you participate, we'll put in 3%, and then we'll match the next 5% dollar for dollar. I've seen plans with no match. So all you'd want to do is make sure that you know what your employer is offering, and HR is happy to explain that to you in detail. And then, if they're offering a match, my non-advice to you, my advice to you is get whatever it takes, contribute so that you get that free money. And then if you have better uses for the extra, like paying off credit cards, building an emergency fund, a house down payment fund, like we talked about in the first way at the top of this section, then do those things after you've gotten the match. If all those other things are taken care of, you don't have any student loans, you don't have any credit cards, you already have a home, your emergency fund is covered because you have a severance plan at your company, then save the max. Make sure you're getting that $23,000. If you happen to be over 50, which is last time's episode with the Gen Xers, well, you can put $30,000 in, because once you're over 50, you get to kick in an extra bonus amount. So there's a lot of ways to do this all inside of your employer-sponsored retirement plan. Make sure you understand the rules that are associated with your employer and take advantage of every rule that falls in your benefit.
Okay, very good. Last one here, David, and this one's my favorite. Us millennials, we like options. We like non-traditional ways of doing things, it seems. So we've talked a lot about 401ks and things like that. I would call those the traditional retirement accounts, IRAs and the like. But I would say a lot of millennials wonder, are there alternatives? Are there other innovative options that we can consider or should consider?
And as you guessed, and as you know, Walter, there are. So,
but that doesn't mean do them all.
One, so finding the one that fits your lifestyle and your goals is awesome. So one I mentioned earlier, when we're talking about 529 plans, we diversified into rental real estate. It worked for us. My father-in-law had a couple of rentals, and I'm looking at it going, and one of my best friends in high school, his dad had a couple of rentals. And I'm thinking, you know what? I think I can do that. I don't mind the extra hassle, because it is a hassle when somebody calls you 11 at night and they say their air conditioner's out and it's August in Kansas City, it's a problem. But I didn't mind doing that. And so we bought some rental properties. You can either be hands off or you can be passive depending on how you like to structure your life. If you're going to be passive about it, well, you're going to earn less because you're paying somebody to take those calls. You get really good tax benefits in America by owning real estate, rental real estate. Your renters pay off the mortgage. So in 30 years, unless you do it faster, you own that property free and clear. And then the income that you earn off of every month might go to put your kids through college. It might go to supplement your retirement income. It could go to anything you want. So it's just another source of income once the building is paid off. So that's one. You might choose to diversify into real estate. You might say, I wouldn't buy a piece of rental property if my life depended on it. Okay, well, maybe you start a side business. Maybe you have these days it's called a side hustle. And maybe it's doing something, maybe you're selling something on the internet. Maybe you have a weekend gig, whatever that might be. If you start a side business, depending on the other income you have, you might be able to do a simple IRA or a SEP or an individual 401k and still have your employer-sponsored retirement plan. There's a lot of rules with that, but it's possible. You might just say, all those things are too busy for me. I'm worried about what taxes are going to be when I retire. They might be higher, and this tax-deferred employer-sponsored plan might not be the best thing. I think I'll take my extra money every month and put it in a taxable brokerage account. If I need the money before 59 and a half, there are no penalties for taking that money out. I'm taxed all along the way, but not on a withdrawal like you are at an IRA. And I can find ways to invest that using tax smart strategies. So maybe you open a brokerage account for that extra money. Maybe, and this is definitely not investment advice for any listeners, but maybe you look for a type of investment that has what I would call asymmetric possibilities on the upside, aka Bitcoin. So I would encourage you to do, if that's the slightest bit of interest to you, I'd encourage you to do a lot of research on your own. I've done a bunch of research on my own, and I do own investments in Bitcoin because my personal research has told me that I think it has a tremendous upside with a modest downside. In other words, it could go to zero. When I started investing in Bitcoin, it was in 2018, and it absolutely could have gone to zero. Today, could it? It could. But I think you have a tremendous upside possibility and a limited downside possibility. That is not going to be right for the vast majority of our listeners. But if you think it might be right for you, then start with a simple Google search. Figure out as much as you can, and maybe that is your side hustle. Maybe that's how you invest your brokerage account. Or you go buy some rental real estate. There are lots of ways other than traditional retirement accounts. Some are new and innovative. Some have been around for a long time. But a little bit of education and a little bit of excitement and motivation might just take you a long way to getting to your retirement goals on time or maybe early. I am really excited about the millennials that I know. They are awesome people. And they're pretty tuned in to this kind of stuff. And so the possibilities, are they endless? Well, in your 20s and 30s, they're almost endless. And so set a strategy, set some goals, and then get after it because time is on your side. Whereas the boomers we talked about a couple weeks ago, time is definitely not on their side. And Gen Xers, to a lesser extent. But when you're 45 to 60, you are in a different driver's seat than the millennials. 28 to 43, you have a lot of choices. Make sure that you study up and then make a really good choice for you and, if you have one, your family.
Well, David, really appreciate you taking some time on your show to dedicate it toward us millennials and letting us kind of get some great information and guidance from you. And again, none of this was specific financial advice for anybody. We got to throw a couple of extra disclaimers out there, I think, today, David. I heard you just
since
carefully.
Yeah, I used the B word.
I heard you carefully placing a few of those
thoughts. That was kind of crazy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes with the regulations and all that kind of stuff, folks, you got to be a little careful of what we talk about broadly here on the show. But as always, if you got more specific questions for David, you can dive into that a little bit more in detail when you call or get in touch. And if you do have some questions on your mind, don't hesitate to reach out. 913-317-1414 is the number, or you can go online to coveryourassetskc.com. For more episodes of the podcast, blogs, videos, other great information and educational opportunities there for you as well. And you can also get in touch through the website, coveryourassetskc.com. All that contact info is in the description of today's show, so you can find it easily. David, thanks for the great information today for the millennials, and we'll look forward to talking to you again on a new topic next episode.
I will look forward to it as well. Thanks, Walter.
All right, thanks so much. That's David Dickens. I'm Walter Storholt. We'll see you next time on Cover Your Assets, KC. Advisory services offered through Creative One Wealth, LLC, an investment advisor. KC Financial Advisors and Creative One Wealth, LLC are not affiliated. We are an independent financial services firm helping individuals create retirement strategies using a variety of insurance products to custom suit their needs and objectives. The information and opinions contained in this program have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. They are given for informational purposes only and are not a solicitation to buy or sell any of the products mentioned. The information is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. This material has been provided by a licensed insurance professional for informational and educational purposes only and is not endorsed or affiliated with the Social Security Administration or any government agency. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for accounting, legal, tax, or investment advice.